Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f- So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Let's go back to 2011 with Squidge. Let's look at the World Cup again with Squidge.
Hello, and welcome again, once again, to the Squid Rugby World Cup Retrospective Podcast, which is, and I want to say this is an exclusive thing, the only rugby podcast where, just before they start recording, their fire alarm, their smoke alarm started beeping about once a minute, so you'll be able to hear, you may hear it in the background, and it's going to drive you all insane. My name, as ever, is Robbie Owen, but if you want to call me Squid, feel free, there it is, there's our extra guest, my fire alarm. And joining me today, as ever, we have...
mildly less annoying than your fire alarm is Will Owen.
And from the terrifically underrated dummy runner on Twitter, we have...
oh, the far more annoying Adam Jenkins.
that's for people to decide. That's, I feel like I am safely the most annoying person in this room, because I'm the only person in this room, because we're recording this remotely. I am proving my own point. The idea with the podcast is we're going to run through... there it is again. There, can you hear it?
A little bit.
A little bit. Okay. It's not that bad. Fine. The idea of the podcast is we're running through every game in the 2011 Rugby World Cup. And today, we're on to an absolute classic. Ireland 22, the United States of America 10. I will begin by saying to Adam, sorry for this being the game you were handed.
I mean, no, it's all right, because despite the sort of objective quality of the game, it was quite a good personal thing for me, because 2011 was the tournament that brought me into rugby. Hmm. And, you know, ever the sort of guy who likes an underdog, you know, USA, that kind of team, that they sort of caught my heart in 2011 as well. So it's also getting to see those players again.
Yeah.
Playing was really nice. You know, as I've got here written down, Paul Emmerich, just in capital letters, you know, great, massive fan of him. Really great to see him just sort of thundering through everything.
Yeah. You are, of course, also on as our official Blaine Scully correspondent.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you want to expand on that?
Well, you know, he signed for the Cardiff Blues a few years ago, and, you know, he's not a bad-looking guy. Like, you know, he's and I also have had the opportunity to actually interview him in person as well. And it's one of those feelings, you know, like, you know, at some points in the Bible when it says if you look at the true face of God, you just melt and you can't comprehend it. It's quite, you know, it's like a biblical Lovecraftian psychological experience meeting him, because he's just so perfect in every way.
That your mind
like sort of struggles to comprehend it. So seeing him in what I thought was, you know, a second or third cap, maybe, I think, this game, he'd only just, you know, started playing for the Eagles. It was an honour to be able to see this.
It is funny, isn't it? It's like when you look at kind of documentaries of gold forming in the mould, of it kind of melted down, and it's kind of like that, this very young Blaine Scully, who isn't fresh-faced so much as, like, he's almost still got spots. And you can kind of see it. He kind of looks a bit like a teenager, and he looks like he's still growing into his face. In that way, as you say, he was a very attractive man. It is, but he was kind of growing into it during this game.
I sort of think of it more as like Michelangelo's David, but freshly chiselled. You know, hasn't had the years a bit of kind of the rare wear and scars you'd kind of expect to see. Mm. You know, just the freshly chiselled marble of Blaine Scully.
If that's Blaine Scully, what's that make Tommy Bowe?
Ooh. Apparently a bumbling idiot if you watch this game, because he dropped the ball about three times in a row.
This is it. So this is the really interesting point. So it's a pretty strong Irish team, to kind of segue onto that. that we've got Tommy Bowe starting, back through of him, Keith Earls, who is, of course, Ireland's all-time leading World Cup try scorer, Jordan Murphy in at fullback, O'Driscoll and Darcy in the centres, and then completing the back line is the young, inexperienced halfback combination of Jonathan Sexton and Conor Murray. Because this was Conor Murray's third cap.
And I can remember thinking it was kind of weird that they selected him to go to the World Cup. And then he comes into this game and you think, oh, okay, it's fair enough. Playing against the USA, they can trust this maybe third choice scrum half to come in. And then he just got higher and higher up the pecking order for Ireland as the tournament went on.
Well, I thought about that. I wondered that. And then they had a moment in which Alan Quinlan on the commentary said, well, you know, I think today Conor Murray's really pushed Owen Redden and Isaac Boss in the fucking shirt. He kind of was like, oh, that's why he started. That's why they threw in this third cap, because those were the other two scrum halves for it.
Mind you, they had Rog on the bench as well.
Yeah.
And obviously that was, you know, having Conor Murray and Sexton start as opposed to having some experience in O'Gara. But I made a note of it when I saw it, and it was quite immediate from as soon as Ireland has the ball, is that 9 and 10 were not going to be involved in the attack at all. It was get it straight out to Darcy and Bod and let them control it. Like it wasn't because Conor Murray was this fresh new, I mean, he was a fresh new sort of face and a fresh new talent for Ireland, but obviously the trust in him that was instilled over the years wasn't there yet. Yeah. And, you know, when you've got that 12, 13 of Darcy and Bod, it's just, you know, you're the new guys, get it to them and, you know, just let them handle it, I suppose.
So there's a moment quite early on as well where Conor Murray goes to take a quick tap and has to be pulled back. And he kind of goes, who are you? When did that get taken out of you? This isn't the Conor Murray I came to know. What's going on?
And likewise, he's hanging out with Owen Redden too much.
Yeah. Likewise, Sexton as well. Like, there's a... I don't know if any of you spotted Sexton joining the national anthems.
No.
I thought the anthems were kind of fascinating. Firstly, the most interesting point in the national anthem is Tim Usaz, the USA's replacement scrum half, who turns, the rest of the team are kind of stood in line, he turns to face the USA flag they have out in the middle, and then kind of stands there, and he's kind of juttering up and down, kind of really excited, hyped up, and very much ready to go and to scream, and he then starts, and you briefly hear him sing when the camera passes by him, horrendously out of tune. It's great. I've got to say,
I think that USA anthem was the best anthem we've heard all tournament so far, from the players and the crowd. I thought it sounded brilliant.
Yeah. They also have that kind of unique thing of being the one team who they all stand with their hand on their heart rather than round each other's shoulders, which I like that.
Yeah.
I'm all for that. But no, Sexton didn't sing the anthem, didn't sound interested, didn't do any of it. And he just kind of sat there, and then the camera was on him when the anthem finished. And he kind of had this look on his face like it was the look you had. Like, he looked like he was going to cry, but not in the way where most players sing the anthem. They look so proud, they're going to burst, they're going to cry. Jonathan Sexton instead looked like his mum had just told me he couldn't play on his PlayStation that weekend. He's going to cry because of that. He just looked slightly pissed off, and he was really upset about it.
It makes a change for Sexton to be slightly pissed off, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah.
It's something like things to come. Yeah.
So I mentioned as well, Tommy Bowe as well, having mentioned the Irish team. Tommy Bowe had one of the worst halves of his career. And yet, because he's Tommy Bowe, goes on to score two tries.
Yeah. And he still looked gorgeous while dropping the ball. So
he's Tommy Bowe.
It's fine.
Yeah. The ball was repelled by him. The ball got really anxious about him.
Yeah.
Because he got near and was like, I can't handle this. I can't do this.
Maybe that's why Sexton was crying, because he was just like, Tommy Bowe's over there and I'm such a big fan. And he was just shaking and sweating out of his eyes.
To then look at the USA team on the other side of it. Blaine Scully at fullback. Pause for applause.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, it's possible that if because Chris Wiles is injured for this match,
yeah.
So they brought in James Patterson for the on the wing, and obviously they had Scully at fullback. I was just thinking if Wiles was available for that game, would Scully have gone on to be, you know, Blaine Scully? Probably, but you know, I like to imagine these kind of things.
Yeah, maybe it would have been slightly less handsome if Wiles played this game.
Maybe.
Wiles came back for the following game and Scully came off the bench. And obviously it was after this tournament that he signed for Tigers, Scully, and then from there for the Blues.
Mm.
I think that's a good question of, you know, there's like a sliding doors moment. Only Chris Wiles gets trapped in the doors.
Yeah, and Scully, I think, did play well in this game, largely thanks to my favourite player, Roland Sanyula, just not wanting to take any kicking duties or anything. And Scully, like, I find that so weird, seeing Scully being the person who goes to the corner and everything, taking the 22 dropouts and stuff, because I never thought of him as a player who did that. Yet all that responsibility was on him, and I think he dealt with it very well on the whole.
A huge boot on him as well, which you kind of forget. Should we mention as well, you just mentioned, one Mr. James Patterson on the wing for the USA, who was bizarrely, an author in his 60s at the time, who somehow, having written loads of books for women about, like for housewives, about, like, books in which a woman with red painted nails goes and, like, solves a murder, or that. I've never read a James Patterson novel.
I can tell.
But I've been to airports, and therefore I have seen them on sale.
I will touch on James Patterson for a little bit, because I remember that recently you brought him up to me, and I didn't remember him whatsoever. I didn't remember the name or anything.
You haven't read the second Murder Club?
No, I haven't. But then the second he stepped up to take his first kick, I kind of vaguely thought, oh, I can kind of remember the USA having a winger who kicked their goals who wasn't that good. And the thing that struck me most about him was he kicked a penalty with his gum shield half hanging out of his mouth.
Yes, what was that? Surely that's more distracting than having it just sort of fully in, or, you know, in your sock or whatever. He was sort of balancing it on his bottom row of teeth or whatever he was doing, hanging out the side of his mouth. I was thinking, like, mate, come on.
Yeah, and he ran back into his own half with it still in that position. And I couldn't get my head around, like, do you not want to just come off once you've done that? Does that not stay in your head for the rest of the time? Like, loads of people on television have just seen me with a gum shield half hanging out my mouth. I can't do this anymore.
That's bizarre. I didn't notice that at all.
Yeah.
I just noticed, like, so the thing, I looked him up as well, because I remembered him a bit, but he was an outright winger. He didn't play fullback, and yet he was a goal kicker, which threw me.
I mean,
that never happens.
Goal kicker is very...
yeah, true.
Very loose term when referring to him, but yeah.
I did find it funny that first penalty he lined up. And I can, as I say, like, I vaguely thought, oh, I can kind of remember, yeah, this winger who kicks goals. And how far he missed that to the right-hand side. It was nowhere near. He was closer to the corner flag than he was to the posts.
Do you want
to be fair to him? Sorry. I just, in any other game, that kick would be sort of memorable, like the Chris Patterson, Scotland, you know, that sort of kick.
True.
But in this game, there were so many terrible kicks. I mean, Rog had a very similar one, I think, in the second half, you know, that was just miles off. And it made no sense, because when you've got a team that had Johnny Sexton and Ronan O'Gara in the same one, and the kicks were just missing all over the place, it was a very odd experience.
Yeah, Sexton missed one between the posts as well from about 30-odd yards out. Sexton had a rubbish game, I thought.
He missed his first two shots. He also
got two from six.
There were three moments in which he went to run like a little scissors switch thing. And on every occasion, all the defenders had been drawn into the guy he was going to throw the scissors to. And on two of them, he noticed there was space wide, and then didn't give the pass anyway. And he just kind of like, no, you've deliberately hamstrung your team. You could have passed to someone that isn't being marked. Instead, you passed to someone that's marked by three people.
Yeah, he had no decoys off him or anything.
As well, in the first half, where Ireland had the ball and they kind of chuck it out to Sexton. And I remember looking, and the USA defence is really narrow, and there's no one for Ireland right out on the wing. I just think, why don't you just have someone go and stand over there where there's no defenders and throw them the ball? And yet they didn't. There was no thought of that.
And to be fair to the USA, I was really sort of focusing on them for this, because, you know, they're the sort of less known quantity of the two. And they really struck me as a team that did their homework so well. Just for this one match, it felt like their entire thing was based around Ireland, what they were going to do with it. They always had about three men marking Bod at once, at any sort of point, you know, and that kind of thing. And they seemed to be able to react so quickly to everything. And obviously their tackle dominance was insane for that game. for being, you know, a bunch of semi pros. They were, you know, making so many massive hits on you know, big Irish guys as well. You know, it wasn't a small Irish pack as well that was that came out, you know, for that match. And
no, not at all.
And they were they really put their weight into it, and it, like I say, it wasn't just the force of the hits, but the knowledge to sort of know where to go with it and who to mark really stuck out to me.
I think to say that the conditions were pretty horrible and the Irish pack were bullying them for most of the time, I think you're right that the USA were really accurate in defence, and that like their kick chase was outstanding, I thought. Even though they didn't bring much in attack, I think that they did well to stop Ireland at source, even if they had a good platform.
Mm.
And I think some of that comes from the fact that the USA's coach for this tournament was Eddie O'Sullivan, who had been Ireland's coach at the previous World Cup. And it kind of just migrated across.
I noticed as well, because 2011 was sort of famous for, with Ireland at least, for them sort of bringing the, they were the mauling team. You know, they mauled from anywhere for any reason. I noticed, you know, there were a couple of occasions where they did sort of monster the American pack, you know, as they would. But there were a couple of occasions when, and I'll mention this with the ref, because he seemed to just completely, because it was Joubert, wasn't it?
Yes, Craig Joubert.
And he seemed to just, about I'd say 80% of what was happening in the match, he just decided to just ignore and let happen, you know, especially with the maul defence for the USA. But again, I think that was down to them doing their homework. They knew what the ref was looking for. And they would just, they'd take it out any way they could. They'd lie on the ground, grab legs, come in from the side. And I think maybe Joubert called it out once for someone coming in the side. But the rest of the time, it worked perfectly. And it stopped this Irish maul. And I thought it was brilliant.
There was one hilarious moment where the USA played the Irish halfback three phases in a row and Joubert chose to not penalise it. And the USA got the turnover off the back of it in the second half.
There's one ruck about 5 metres out from the USA's own line, and the USA player enters completely from the Irish side and clears one of the players out on the, as though he was wearing a green shirt. It's the most not through the gate thing I've ever seen, not by Richie McCaw. And yeah, they completely get away with it. And it's almost like just the audacity of him coming in at scrum half for Ireland that you're kind of like, oh, fair enough, you know, you might as well let that go.
I think most of it came from Todd Clever, who was just sort of this man who, he likes hitting things and he likes taking the ball off the ground, and they sort of put him onto this rugby pitch, and I don't know, something about him, the confidence in which he does every little thing that he does, somehow is that kind of classic flanker way of being able to sort of get past the rules, even though he wasn't the best at what he was doing. The fact that he went in it with such gusto that it just felt like, oh, well, of course he can do that. He's doing it. You know, the amount of times he was on like his elbows at the ruck and flopping everywhere, and, you know, the high tackles were quite common and just, I suppose, high in our terms now, but maybe not wouldn't have seen so high at the time, but still quite up there. And, yeah, I love that kind of very American sort of brashness that they went into the game with.
Like, he was exactly the player you'd think he was by looking at his hair. Like,
yes.
He played with the confidence of someone who walked around every day with that haircut.
Also, to touch on great bits of punditry, Lawrence Dallaglio saying, oh, well, Todd Cleaver, he's played in South Africa and therefore he knows about the physical side of rugby.
Yes,
it's really taken him. It's taken him a trip to South Africa to realise that he's not playing touch rugby when he goes to the World Cup.
Yeah. There was that very, when they asked Dallaglio about the stuff during, before and during half time and then after the game, he was very, I've heard of three of these players and I'm going to talk about them as much as I can. Like, I'm not doing my research into. I didn't mention my stat on James Patterson. Do you want to know it?
Yes, please.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
do
yeah.
Do you want to know his career goal-kicking success rate? Okay?
Is it above 50?
Oh, no, it's not.
oh, God.
So,
you know that thing about that rugby league sketch about Australia playing Russia? The Russian kicker misses between the post, and he says, it was the best kicker in the whole of Russia, and I can't believe he missed. Is it that kind of situation?
So, James Patterson won 12 caps for the USA, okay? You saw in that game both of the kicks he nailed. his career. So he missed two in that game. He went on to take four more shots at goal for the USA and missed all of them.
So he was the designated goal kicker, not from the bench, but from kickoff, having not kicked a goal for the Eagles.
Nope, haven't eaten.
Amazing, that's brilliant. I love them. That's perfect semi-pro international rugby team. That's exactly what I want to hear from a World Cup.
As is customary for all rugby clubs anywhere around the world, every warm-up ever is people doing drop goals from 40 metres. Do you think James Paterson was always the person who stood underneath the post and booted the ball back? And I just thought, oh, he's probably fine. Give him the goal kick, he'll be fine.
He's the guy, he's the winger who always fancied himself as a kicker and turned up 5 minutes early to practice his kicking, but was not actually any good under pressure.
And starts crying when people says he can't kick, so he's going to kick this time.
He'd always kind of go like, oh, actually, we've got free kicking options on our team, and everyone just kind of humoured him. And then one day, it came to that occasion, and he had to step up. And also because it's only Wiles injured, isn't it? He's the only player missing from that team. And I know he did kick goals as well, Chris Wiles. But was he their only goal kicker? If you're resulting in a guy who'd never kicked a goal before and never kicked a goal again in your team.
As I say, Roland Sanyula wasn't exactly thirsty to take all responsibility, was he? And I'm not sure if I'm...
For literally anything.
not just goal kicking. Yeah.
I noticed Andrew Sanyula played, but I didn't notice Roland at all.
No.
It sort of got me thinking that it's quite sad because you look at that 2011 US team and the names in it, some of them are like genuinely great players like Paul Emmerich who I think, I've noted here that he pretty much outshone Bod for most of the game. Like whenever they had there were a couple of occasions when he maybe got pushed back when, you know, Darcy came in with him, but for most of the game, attack and defence, Emmerich was over him. He was pushing past him. He was breaking past him. It was a brilliant performance. And I was just thinking how they had some great players in 2011, and they've got some great players now. You know, if they had 10 like McGinty or something like that.
Yeah.
And if those sort of teams had overlapped just a little bit, you know, they might have had some really good scalps.
But
it's just they've had the wrong players at the wrong time, I think, and it's. Maybe now that'll change with MLR, but it did sort of strike me a little bit that they seem to have sort of missed each other a little bit.
It is a real shame that the likes of Paul Emmerich, as you mentioned, and a few that, like Mike Petrie as well at scrum half, I thought was really good.
He had a really good game.
And I remembered him being this kind of like, being the USA scrum half, being this entirely solid nine, and he was excellent. He's got his box kicking was fantastic,
was
and
great.
His making was really good.
He did one really good one in the first half, particularly for Ngwenyu to chase, and Ngwenyu didn't really see a lot of ball, as probably, other than Clever, probably the most famous player in this team, and mainly because of that time he skinned Havana. But
one of the two players Lawrence Delaney had heard of,
And then by half time he'd heard of Emmerich.
Yeah. I bet he knew more of the random pretty girls with USA flags on their face in the crowd than he did the extra team on the pitch.
Yeah.
He probably paid a few of them. Yeah.
Also, I mean, it's not like the names in this USA team are hard to remember, given you've got Mike McDonald and John Van de Gijsen and Marte Moiakiola, which, albeit that one, I can forgive him.
Yeah, I love Mike McDonald because he clearly was like a proper third team prop. Because he was a big fat bloke from Leeds, and he had a little moustache, and he loved kind of running with the ball. He couldn't scrummage anymore, because at this point he was like 38.
In the teams, he's a good lad.
Yeah, exactly. And because he'd played for Leeds for years, and he'd played in the Premiership, and he'd kind of been at a high standard his entire career. And yet, he had completely run out. Like, that first scrum, the way Ireland just blew them off the ball completely was incredible. Yeah. It was like watching Springboks in the last World Cup final. Only... It wasn't that, and you know, Mike McDonald wasn't bothered in the scrum, but he was a good lad and he had a moustache, so fair enough, crack on.
Yeah,
I remember writing as that happened. I was writing scrums in 2011 were a mess. We can't complain now. And then looked up and saw that was happening. I thought, oh well, shit. You know, they've just ruined that. that was such a good like. But no, I think as a rule, generally. God, there were so many. I know the conditions weren't great, but the resets were so painful. And compared to now, it's a lot better now than it was.
Yeah. I found that over the whole thing is that actually, yes, we do have a lot of resets now, especially if you compare it to 70s rugby, but it's so much better than it was 10 years ago. And the standard refereeing, I think, is so much higher as well. I think actually a lot less is let go with the breakdown, and the breakdown is a far fairer contest than it was. And in some ways, maybe if you're a flanker, you don't think that's a good thing. But actually, I think it's the game is far more level and better refereed these days.
Yeah, no, agreed.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I've touched upon some of the names of the American players, and when it came to doing some research on USA Rugby as a general thing, I've devised a quiz for the two of you to partake in.
Okay.
So I'm about to list the names of six things, and I want you to tell me whether it's a rugby ground in the USA or a song by New York indie rock band Vampire Weekend.
All right, okay. Right. Are we working against each other on this one, or is this teamwork?
Work against each other. See if you can.
Okay.
You know, see if you can win. Okay. So number one is Ray Sheeran, Treasure Island. What do we think?
I'm gonna say that's a club.
I want to begin by making it clear that I am confused that there's a band called Vampire Weekend. That was actually what I was due to be doing this week, if not for lockdown. But alas, no. I think it's a song by Vampire Weekend.
Adam?
Yeah, I'm going to stick with the club.
Okay. Ray Sheeran, Treasure Island is a rugby ground in the USA, so it's 1-0 to you, Adam. Okay, number two. Cape Cod, Kwasa Kwasa.
What?
Is that a rugby ground in the USA?
No. That's Fozzie Bear having a stroke. I think that's a rugby ground in the USA.
God. All right. I don't know.
That's called Kwasa Kwasa.
Yeah, that's a stupid Vampire Weekend song.
It is a stupid Vampire Weekend song. Yes. Well done. That's 2-0. Number three, Harmony Hall.
That's a Vampire Weekend song.
I'm gonna go opposite again. I'm gonna go for the club ground.
It's a Vampire Weekend song. So it's 2-1.
I said that with a certainty, as though I knew that.
I did not. Infinity Park.
Yes. That's a rugby ground. Played the... No, not the All Blacks, that was Soldier Field. They played someone there, I'm sure.
Isn't it... is that the one in Colorado?
That sounds about right, yeah. I've definitely watched a rugby match from Infinity Park. I think the Avengers were playing.
Okay, points all round for that then. You're both right. So that's 3-2 to Adam still. Number five, the penultimate is Upward Star.
Vampire Weekend.
I'm going to say Vampire Weekend.
You're both wrong. It's a USA rugby ground.
God. Is that in Texas or something? They love their stars in Texas.
Finally, number six, M79 Campus.
Okay.
Is that a Vampire Weekend song or a USA rugby ground?
I'm going to say a Vampire Weekend song.
Yeah, I'm going to say Vampire Weekend.
You're both right. It's a combination of two Vampire Weekend songs. So, Adam, you're the winner. You are the winner of this game.
Brilliant.
I don't have a prize prepared for you. Maybe we'll organise a meet and greet with either Todd Clever or Vampire Weekend. I don't know.
Maybe we could have some kind of Vampire Weekend concert at a rugby ground in the USA.
Yes. Now we're talking. Anyway, that was a complete aside. Should we get back to the game of rugby?
Oh yeah, that happened.
Yeah.
Actually, speaking of a slight aside, I wanted to know if either of you noticed anything. You know, in the second half when the players have come out and they're sort of milling around on the field for the adverts to end and, you know, they're sort of filming the players sort of standing there. They had a sort of lingering shot on Brian O'Driscoll, and he had a really big burp.
Like, it was a massive one. And
you could see it. It was building up in his... You could see his body changing. Like, it was building up in his stomach. And then he just had this big sort of exhalation. And I was like...
B in BOD stands for.
And I just thought, that's one of the most incredible physical depictions of a burp I've ever seen without actually having heard it.
Yeah, I could do anything.
Yeah, I thought, you know, what a genius that guy is.
Yeah. It's like a 90s Ben Stiller movie.
It makes you wonder, of all like the great tries you watch over and over again on YouTube, and how many of them do you think the try scorer farted?
Oh, see, I reckon this happens surprisingly often.
Yeah.
I reckon there's a lot of, like, even further than just farting, I think there's a lot of, like, a little bit of shit came out happening on international rugby fields.
Oh, if Lineker can do it in a football match, then, I mean, there's there's every chance it's happened in rugby.
Clip of Jerry Collins going and pissing on the side of the pitch. That's fun.
Yeah.
And like, just because he doesn't give a shit, ironically, he gives a piss, but he doesn't give a shit.
Nice.
He just walks over the corner flag, wheezes on it, and walks back to the scrum.
Hey, do you want to know somebody else who is shit? This is not a good segue.
Are you going to throw into the Sunyula brothers?
We can talk about the Sunyula brothers.
Sure.
Let's talk, well, particularly Andrew Sunyula. First thing I want to address is that one phase of play that the USA had where, firstly, he popped up at 10 about 2 yards out, like, width-wise from the ruck itself, just so he could say he had the ball, again, in the sort of be a pro kind of way to set up a pod forwards, which the scrum half could have just passed to himself. And he picked out the wrong man in the pod of forwards. And then he threw a through-the-legs pass at that phase when he went into ruck, which Mike Petrie then did like a weird backhand flick thing. And then Blaine Scully started running backwards, which was one of the most terrible bits of play I've ever seen from a team in like the World Cup. But the main thing about Sunyula that I wanted to talk about was his box kick before the Rory Best try, which goes backwards.
Yes. Yes, or in fact, no. Because it is, the thing it reminds me of is the Tim Nally-Williams box kick in the last World Cup. Where Tim Nally-Williams had gone from being Samoa's best player in the previous World Cup and having a good game in their opening match to them being so overconfident in his next 3 games that he's trying to take box kicks and he's trying to do everything. He's in full Parise mode. And it does not go well for him. And Sunyula has exactly that same moment.
Yeah, I'm not really sure what he does other than start fights.
Without having played well previously.
Yes.
He just...
Yeah, if you're going to step in and take the ninth position and box kick yourself, you better be already on 2 tries or 2 assists or something. So the coach can look down and go, yeah, it's fine. He's having a good game anyway. You know, let's not bring him off and bring on Nessie Malefa.
So we've sort of touched on Tommy Bowe and his first
I'd like
half.
To touch on Tommy Bowe.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Oh, yeah. No, that makes sense. He'd probably drop you, though. I mean, that.
I wouldn't blame him if he did drop me if I came out of nowhere.
Yeah, like you say, we sort of said, we made a bit of fun about how he didn't have the best first half, but he did score 2 tries, and I sort of had a look at sort of how they came about, because the USA defence was so solid in open play, you know, how Ireland did that, and most of it from what I could see came from BOD watching from the USA, because they'd marked him really well, and I think it was, yeah, the first one was an inside pass to Tommy Bowe from Sexton. And you can see there's about 3 of the USA players all looking at the centre channel. They're not looking at the 9 and 10 channel at all because they've been doing nothing all game. They've just been shoveling it out, doing whatever. And so, of course, because that channel hadn't been touched by Ireland all game, they weren't expecting that gap to be there. Tommy Bowe just runs right through. Of course, the only person that can really catch him on the USA side is Ngwenya, and he's halfway across the pitch, so that was a given. And the second one as well was another bit of BOD watching, but in a different way, in that he was out on the wing for Bo's second try in the second half, and the panic in the US once they realised that he had the ball in space on the wing, they just completely flooded towards him, and it ended up with the USA have guys they're covering. But Blaine Scully, bless him, he stood there with Brian O'Driscoll and Tommy Bowe in front of him. Tommy Bowe running a supporting line. And he doesn't know what to do. You know, whatever decision he takes, you can already tell in his mind it's going to be the wrong one, because one of these guys is going to score. So he just doesn't do anything. And, you know, as is quite typical of Blaine in that match, he just runs backwards. And it was quite sort of thing in that they were so, despite how solid they were, they were so terrified of Brian O'Driscoll.
Yeah.
That they completely let that defence collapse for that try purely because of him. I just thought it was really interesting.
Yeah, it felt a lot like that, didn't it? As you say, there was a lot of Bod watching, and you didn't notice that much of him other than the second Tommy Bowe try, which is all him, and he just kind of makes the break and then gives it back inside to Bowe.
But yeah.
A lot of that is them marking him really solidly. A lot of that is Sexton and Darcy just kind of shipping it on rather than there actually being any kind of shape
yes.
of creativity
yeah,
in
yeah.
the Irish backline. Like, I was really struck by how poor their attack was. And actually, their defence was quite well organised, but there was no line speed whatsoever. They didn't even really walk up.
Yeah.
They just kind of stood still on the gain line. Like, maybe they jittered forward a little bit.
And they had such a good platform that you'd think they'd create something out of it. Of course, there was like a 2 or 3 brief minute stint where they managed to make a couple of line breaks on the trot. You thought, oh, okay, this would be it then. They've just been kind of patiently waiting for the USA line to carve up. But from there on, there was no real momentum sort of made. And they didn't get a bonus point in the end, which didn't matter that much, I suppose. But yeah, I also don't think they played like the conditions well whatsoever.
No, until Ogara came on.
Yes.
Until Ogara came on, and it was a game custom-made for Ronan Ogara. I think Quinlan said that in the commentary. And he comes on, he just dinks it into the corner twice, and like, oh, okay, this is what we should have been doing the whole time. It was a game for Rog.
Yeah. Sexton's not a man known for his patience, is he?
No. No, he's a man of many talents, but none of them patience.
Yeah.
I was just going to say, it must be interesting from someone like, from Rog's position, to be a player like him, and just be known for being like, when a game is really shit, to be that guy, you know, who you want to come on and just shovel it.
Yeah.
You know.
And there's the stuff he's talked about as a coach. He said that he wants to be a far more rounded coach than he ever was a player. And that he recognised his shortcomings as a player. But he knew, I'm very, very good at this, and this is why I am picked. This is what I'm picked to do. And this is what I do better than basically anyone else, maybe other than Dan Parks on a good day.
Isn't he a defence coach somewhere now?
Oh, he has been. He's been a defence coach, attack coach. He kind of... I know he said his ultimate job is to be Munster to head coach, and he wants to work towards that, but he doesn't feel he's worthy yet.
Right.
So he constantly just keeps shifting around hemispheres, and I think it's a really interesting approach to kind of building a CV and to becoming a better coach. I think he's actually doing really interesting things pretty consistently as a coach, in a way he didn't as a player. He just dinked it in the corners behind.
Yeah, yeah. And fair play to him. And scored winning drop goals as like a hobby.
Yeah, that was just what he did on the weekends. Yeah.
Yeah.
Literally on the weekends because they played on Saturdays. So the thing that I was going to mention a moment ago, with Ireland's defence having absolutely no line speed whatsoever, there's one moment in which the USA run this really interesting backs move in which the scrum half passes into a pod of 4 forwards who then pass it out to him, back to the scrum half who's looped around them. The scrum half then throws it on to 12, who does like a pass back into 10 inside him, then passes to the winger, who's kind of hitting a line. And if they'd ran that nowadays, it would have worked. But because Ireland had absolutely no line speed, they just sat, let them do this complicated passing move, and then ran straight into, I think it was Patterson or Nguyenye, whichever one it was. Might have been Emmerich even.
It was Nguyenye.
If they'd done it now, if they'd done it now, that would have put Nguyenye for a hole, because people would have been drawn to it, and it'd actually be line speed to the thing. Whereas instead, it was just kind of weighed around slightly dull and bored.
Yeah, yes and no, because the thing is, the way that they had lined up, that move would have been great if their like intention was to go wide. But I feel like a variation of that move would be really good today. If sort of the outside centre ran a bit tighter, and it was just sort of a very short little lifted no-look pop for Nguyenye on the right-hand side, that would have worked if they did it so much tighter to the line. As you say, like, line speed is a big part of it. If the defence is in your face, then it's almost easier to find the small gaps and get somebody to run through them when they're that flat to the line. But I think you're right that a tightened variation of that to sort of go around this brand new concept of line speed would have worked today. But I just think that the way in which the USA used a variation with long push passes didn't work and would never have worked.
And I did also think that most championship defenses these days would eat those two attacks alive.
Yeah.
Like, they had so many backs just stood there. And there's one moment with Andrew Sonnyula in particular, in which there's a few times, every time he catches the ball, you can see him thinking before he makes a decision. He doesn't do anything on instinct. He clearly stops, weighs it up, and then makes a decision. And he then didn't do that when he came into box kick. But he did otherwise. He kind of clearly set up, and there's a moment in which he kind of stops. And he pauses for like 3 seconds whilst he looks on either side. He kind of goes, that guy, and then he passes it, and he does it even slower than I just described it. And a modern defence would eat that. And yeah, that actually got outside the Ireland defence, despite how slowly he made the decision.
Again, credit to Paul Emmerich for going forward despite having two Sonnyula brothers inside him. This won't be the last time I rip into the Sonnyula brothers, by the way, because for some reason I just have this irrational, every time I see them play, I think, oh, these guys again, sort of thing. So, yeah.
I mean, what Robbie was saying earlier about the fact that the backline move that would have worked today.
Yeah.
I was thinking about sort of the way, how solid the USA were, you know, despite having two Sonnyulas on the team. And they don't have that today, and they haven't had that kind of solid team. I don't know how to describe it, but the way they were defending, and of course the sort of structure they had was like, huh, that's not how the USA normally play. At least how we see them today. Yeah. They're quite a floppy team in that they very much let the momentum of the game carry them, and they, you know, they're very sort of broken up and a bit sort of disconnected. I thought, oh God, they look like a proper team here, and they're half semi-pros.
Yeah.
And I was just thinking, like, that kind of, obviously that's all coaching at that point.
Yeah.
If they had that today, it would be so much better, because they, you know, all the coaching changes they've had over recent years and all the regime changes at USA Rugby with the different leagues and everything they've had, they still haven't had that team solidity that they need, that they had in 2011.
Even when they pulled off big results, even when they've beaten Samoa or they've beaten Scotland most notably, it's been really loose games. And like, you look at that Scotland game, you know, it was a really high-scoring game. They won it right at the end. It was 30-plus points on both sides. You look at the two wins over Samoa, and both of them, they won it in the last play with a late kick. And the one last year in particular, they should have put that game to bed. And they've always been a team a bit like that, even when they've been playing well. They've always either let in soft tries along the way, or they've not quite clicked in the way they could, and they've not dominated games that they could have been able to. They've just scraped home in games where they could have really run away with it, except against Canada, which is kind of the one time where they have that kind of, well, lately anyway, have had that kind of superiority complex, and they've had that belief in themselves that we are the better of these two teams. And I think that's quite interesting. Maybe it's just because it's such a, if you're a rugby player in the US, it's such a minority sport, you're kind of always up against it. It's hard to breed that kind of confidence. I don't know.
Yeah.
Maybe MLR would really help that as well, because you have players coming from winning cultures.
I don't know. Yeah, it just struck me that even though they did lose, obviously, to Ireland, that outside of the set piece, they were dominant.
Yeah.
They looked like the more structured team. They looked like they had more of an idea of what was going on in open play. And I just thought, you know, even if a USA team that won today wouldn't have that kind of look to them, they just sort of, it would just happen to them.
Yeah, and it's weird, because there's quite a contrast, because they look mostly shapeless, sort of in phase attack, and even like at ruck time, but as you say, like as soon as they got to open play, they actually looked relatively organised, and like there was a decent bit of trust among the players, despite the Sonnyula brothers. So I think that probably speaks volumes of, I guess, the coaching, as you say.
Yeah, and I do think MLR is like a really interesting point, and I want to see how it continues to develop for them. Because we've already seen, like, it was huge for Uruguay last year, in that they were able to get 10 players into MLR in pro contracts. And that should be the same case with the USA, but they weren't quite together in the way I kind of, frankly, I thought the USA would be better than they were in that World Cup. And they were kind of the team I was tipping as, like, watch these guys, they could cause an upset.
Agreed.
And they had a good 50-odd minutes against France, and that was about it, which was a shame, because I do think they've got more performances like we kind of saw here, where Ireland's two tries, they were, you know, a Tommy Bell try from like a Brian O'Driscoll bit of magic. You had a Roy Best try from Sonny Euler trying a box kick, and I was going with them all. And then you had that Tommy Bell try right at the end of the first half when it was the only real period of possession that Ireland put together where they were threatening and they were kind of working through the phases and they were being patient. And then they had, you know, kind of one misread and Tommy Bell scores under the posts or just yeah. next to the post. And it was it's a really good finish by Tommy Bell. Like, it looks quite simple, but he's got two men coming across. They could have easily stopped him. And he dives so early that he gets over so safely. And you kind of then have Mike Petrie punches the post in like a Zanin manner, which is fun. But yeah, like, they were fairly standard. It's one misread, it's one maul, which was, as you say, set piece was the one area where they were kind of really up against it. And it's one Brian O'Driscoll moment, and otherwise they could have won or drawn that game.
Yeah, and with that first Tommy Bow try, you're right, it does look like very poor defence on that last phase from the USA, because they find Mike McDonald's marking Tommy Bow.
Yes.
And Tommy Bow, rather than just sort of taking the positive carry on that, managed to beat him cleanly in not a lot of space, because Sexton doesn't give him the greatest of service with that pass. And you're right, he managed to split the entire defence like that. And as you say, like, he finishes it so early and doesn't give like the scramble defence any chance to get there. I think a lot of wingers would have just taken a positive carry out of that. Yet Tommy Bow managed to make that 5 points, which was very crucial, because the big difference between 10-0 going in at half-time to 3-0.
Absolutely, yeah. Do we have any other points of business? Do we have anything else we want to throw up about specifics in the game?
Not from me.
No. Should we just, can we, I know it's not really a tactical point in the game, but I just want to mention the fact that Paul Emmerich did score a try.
Yes,
it was in the last minute. Yes, it was, you know, completely once the game had gone, but it just sort of capped a game that was obviously really emotional for the USA, because we didn't really discuss this at the start, but I did make a note of it.
Mm.
And it sort of took me by surprise when I watched it, that the game took place on the 10th anniversary of 9/11.
Yes, it did.
And that was a huge point in the build up to the game. It made the anthems a lot more emotional for the USA.
Yeah.
And, you know, once the game had got going and Ireland, you know, had built up the score, it was sort of, you know, forgotten about a little bit. And then when, you know, there's just, you've got that sight of Paul Emmerich running across the field, you know, there's no chance of anyone catching him. He's going in for the last minute. It's a standout moment of the game for me, even though it was a completely lost cause. It was just nice to see. The payoff, I suppose, from the early emotion of the game, to have, you know, the best player on their team just have a clear run to the line. It was quite nice to see.
Absolutely. Yeah. And he takes the intercept from Brian O'Driscoll.
And he then runs to the post. And there's something magical about
Darcy.
That as well.
You had to ruin it. On the 10th anniversary of 9/11, you had to ruin it. You undid all the good work they'd done over those 10 years to rebuild society. Do you not remember that time that SNL allowed us to laugh again? Do you not remember how no one in America laughed between 9/11 and that SNL special going out 2 weeks later so bravely and boldly? I once watched a full 90-minute documentary on it. It was shit. And it wasn't very funny, that thing. I can't believe that you undid the work of, like, Bill Murray or whoever was hosting SNL that week. I can't believe what you just did. What was the point you even made? Gordon Darcy, an entirely good player. Why do you belittle him like that?
I would like to apologise to my family, and I'd like to apologise to all my friends, both of them, and to anybody else who's listening, particularly the good citizens of the United States.
There's no need to show off that you've got two friends.
I think we could all say with real certainty that despite NSL's, you know, feeble attempt at bringing a smile back to America, it was really Paul Emmerich 10 years later streaking across a rainy field in New Zealand that really, you know, brought the soul back into America. Forget Freedom Fries and, you know, the New World Trade Center.
Paul Emmerich made America great again.
He did. He did.
There were farmers at that moment somewhere in Dallas that had no idea. They weren't watching the game. They've never even heard of it.
They smiled.
And at that moment,
they knew.
Thank you for ruining the punchline. Yeah, I was going to build up to that.
Sorry, mate.
They smiled. Yep, for the first time. What is this feeling? Why are my lips on an upward curve?
But on a serious note, As much as I do think Ireland were the better team.
Because 9-11 isn't serious at all, is it?
I would like to once again apologise to my family and my now zero friends after that first one, as well as the punchline and everyone else listening. But on a really serious note,
yes,
Ireland deserved to win this game of rugby. But the USA did deserve a try. And I think that was great, seeing him stick his arm in the air and dive between the posts for a photo, which is still his Twitter profile picture.
Of course. I want to find as well, now that we've got to the actual real end of the game, just have a moment to reflect on it, because it isn't quite like the England-Argentina game, which was a real slog. Like, that was shite. But this game also made me quite tired. I did not enjoy this match, watching it back.
Yeah, particularly the second half. I was getting a bit sleepy during.
I haven't got any notes on one of the tries because I was just sad. And then I got back into it. I think it was the second try. I think it was the fact that it's the USA, the box kick, everything. It's just sort of, they've been doing so well, and it was just sort of like, oh no, okay, this is the way it's going to go. But then I got back into it.
You were saying a bit before we started as well about you having not watched rugby in a while, but the game that you got to watch was this game.
Yeah, it was mixed feelings. I mean, you know, maybe I should have sort of, I don't know, if I had been been watching replays of all of Wales's greatest victories over the last 10 years, you know, all two of them, and just, you know, built myself up, would that have made it worse? Probably. Yeah. I think the fact that this was the only full rugby match I'd seen in about 2 months made it a little bit better, but it was also a bit sad.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to the next terrible game of 2011 that you want me to watch.
What was the
next absolute shitfest that you were planning to...
So we've lined up already a guest for Scotland 15, Georgia 6, which, okay. Let me tell you, is an absolute classic. That's the next one I'm really dreading from the... We haven't got worked out the full schedule yet. But, yeah, it was not a vintage game, this. And it was a bit like... As you what you're just saying there reminds me of... You know, when you spend so long looking forward to the first game of the Six Nations every year? And so often...
And it's always shit.
Is shit.
Yeah.
I still so fondly remember that time, that first game was the France Italy game where Parisi went for a drop goal in the last minute to win it. And because that's the last time the first game of the Six Nations was properly great. Because every time since then, at best, it's been a runaway game with loads of tries, like where's Italy this year? Where it's like, oh, there's two nice tries, that's fine. But so often it's just nothing, isn't it?
Kelly Haimona, of course, avoiding responsibility like a certain other 10 we've discussed today.
Also avoiding the ball in general.
Yeah.
Okay.
Exactly.
If no one else has any points of order, I think this brings us to, and I realise now that I forgot to mention we do this to you, Adam, so I apologise. We'll give you an extra moment. We normally nominate at the end a man of the match and a dick of the day. And for me, today, I'll begin, because for me, it's Tommy Both. Because Tommy Bo, I think, is both. Because I think he's clearly dick of the day. There's a moment in which he drops a high ball from a 22 dropout, and he, in the process, after dropping it, he then picks it back up, goes to try and pass it to someone as though it'd gone backwards or whatever, to pass it off. He then knocks it on, like just drops it in front of him. He then goes to try and pick it up, and he fumbles it forward. And that kind of summed up his first half, as did the fact that he scored two tries and was kind of the one Ireland player that made a difference in terms of actual moments that mattered. That he turned up and finished two chances when they had plenty that they blew. They had one that was Keith Earls, like, made this really lovely break and then passed it back about like a straight 10 metres back into Tommy Bowe's shin, having like somehow weaved it between like five USA players that were all going for the intercept.
Yeah, no, that fumble was funny because he really tried to start that out as, yeah, this has gone backwards, right, sir? And he picks it back up as if he's just going to try and play on. And then he goes miles forward. And it's really just salt in the wounds.
The other guy I kind of had in contention, just to quickly throw, is Mike Petrie, who I thought was very good for the USA, but it kind of fell. And again, Paul Emmerich as well, I thought had a good game. And Blaine Scully, solid. And Guanyu didn't see much of the ball, but he made a couple of really good tackles. But it kind of felt like it's quite an obvious thing to give to the guy that scores two tries. But
yeah,
Thomas Jumbo.
Yeah, I've man of the match. I think for the USA, the one player that stood out a lot to me was Todd Clever, because of the amount of hits he made, and sort of they were all positive hits, as Adam was touching on earlier. I think that Tommy Bowe, I've nominated for being gorgeous. Donnacho O'Callaghan, I think, was a perfectly functional set piece, which is one of the things that was best for Ireland. But I'm going to say Mike Ross, because he dominated all the scrums and gave him a good platform. Sadly, they did nothing with it. Jamie Heaslip also controlled very well at the back. But yeah, I'd say Mike Ross is my man of the match. Adam, how ready are you? Do you want me to fill more time by doing my dick of the day? Or
Go on.
So, dick of the day. Well, I won't say any more about Sunyula. Bod for a few handling errors when, you know, he's supposed to be the best player in the world, mate. Like, what are you doing? Oh, Craig Joubert. There was one point in the second half where he saw somebody who was down injured with cramp, and he says to the players, no, I'm not stopping for that. We need to play on. Despite the fact that the player was stood right next to the line out, and I think it was Mike Petrie or Roland Sanyula or something, was down injured. And he was like, no, we'll do that. And then one of the players pointed out, like, no, he's right next to us. And then eventually he did stop it, but he was very unwilling to do so in the first place. So he was a nomination. But no, I'll give it to Gordon Darcy for being the man who passed to Emmerich, who was stood directly there. Maybe he was doing it out of kindness.
I'm just gonna correct you. You're gonna give it to Brian O'Driscoll for throwing the pass to bloody Bill Murray or Will Ferrell, who was presenting SNL that week.
Yeah, Uncle Sam.
Yeah. Adam, yeah. Have we got any thoughts?
Man of the match. I mean, there's obviously, I love Blaine Scully, but he was a very fresh-faced young man, and he did make a few mistakes in the first half, despite a lovely break in the second half. I mean, I watched this game. The one thing that kept me going was Paul Emmerich, knowing that I'd get to watch him just absolutely have a great time out there, running over Brian O'Driscoll a number of times, carrying him about 5 meters each one. I think it was just, it was always going to be Paul Emmerich.
Okay. Fantastic. And any nominations for Dick of the Day?
Well, I mean, it was something that Will mentioned earlier in a very poignant point about the US national anthem in the turning towards the flag.
Yes.
But it wasn't quite as, I think, as dignified as he maybe made it out to be. Because when, I can't remember, who did you say it was that turned towards the flag?
Tim Usas, yes. The replacement scrum half. Yeah.
Yeah. And this sort of caused the players around him to also sort of join. Yes, great idea. I'm going to face the flag. And then, I don't know, someone must have shouted from the touchline or something, like, no, you've got to face forward. This is what you do in rugby. This isn't the NFL, guys. You know, whatever. Like, you can't take a knee or whatever it is you do. Or not do. And yeah. And sort of half of them turned back then, like, away from the flag. And then sort of back towards the crowd, and it was very sort of uncomfortable, and it only ended up being about 3 or 4 players in the lineup then facing the flag. And so I'm going to go for the US replacement scrum half for well-intentioned but ultimately poorly executed show of patriotism in the anthems.
Fantastic. Okay, I also want to mention, just on the Tim Usas point, that so Tim Usas at the time played for Nottingham, RFC in the Championship. And this meant that I get to continue and start a new tradition, because over the course of this tournament, I've been counting every time that Nottingham-born and bred commentator Martin Gilliam mentions Nottingham on Knots in commentary. And he mentioned it 4 times in New Zealand v Tonga, and 5 times in...
What was his other game? France v Japan.
Yeah. This time, with a Nottingham-based player playing... The commentator, who I believe was Simon Ward, it wasn't Martin Gilliam, only mentioned Nottingham twice. So, at the moment, after 7 games, we're at commentators who are Martin Gilliam mentioning Nottingham, 9. Commentators who are not Martin Gilliam mentioning Nottingham, 2. I'm going to keep this count running over the course of the whole World Cup and see which side wins. I've got my money on one side rather than the other.
I mean, Knots were the real winners of 2011, by the sounds of it.
Absolutely. So, finally, before we go, Adam, is there anything you want to plug, anything you want to mention? Where can people find you on the social medias and that?
Oh, right, yeah. So, in, I think it was October, I made a tweet. If you want to go back and retweet that, because that was the only one that did any sort of, any sort of action on Twitter, you know, feel free. But no, I mean, I do run the Dummy Runner account. I mean, run is a very generous way of describing it, but I guess walk it.
You dummy run. Maybe sort of,
you know. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I'm going to try and sort of post on it a little bit. I always say that, but I mean, there's not a lot of rugby going on at the moment, if you hadn't noticed. So
no.
There's not a massive amount of things to draw on for the account. What I could do is just retweet my Israel Folau article every day.
I like that.
But, you know, I feel like that would be giving him attention that he doesn't deserve, despite his arachnophobia.
The fact that Israel Folau is afraid of pig gay ants is still a phrase that delights me. If anyone hasn't seen it, it's dummy_runner on Twitter. And the Israel Folau article on him saying he's afraid of spiders is very funny.
Thank you. That means a lot coming from someone who has internet clout.
Okay. Anything else? Anything else before we call it a day?
I'll always plug my Line Break Bros as well.
Of course.
Not that we're really making anything at the moment. Not that we would be if there's any rugby on, because we all have lives. But no, I mean, we're mainly based on Twitter now. With a mad kind of multiple personality vibe, considering there's about three people that regularly tweet kind of slightly differing opinions, which leads to some confusion. But yeah, I'd say give them a follow if you want kind of, you know, if Karl Marx liked rugby, you'd love Line Break.
That's pretty yeah. much spot. I've also got to the point with it now as well, with the Line Break account, where I can tell who's tweeting most often just by the way it's written and by how much it mentions Dan Fish and or Exeter.
Yeah. Yeah, it's the tweets that mention Dan Fish and Exeter that really confuse people. I mean, I'd love to do a podcast on Dan Fish, to be honest. And there's so many
things to talk about. It's good that we've managed to pigeonhole Dan Fish's name into a World Cup podcast. I think we might as well stop here.
I'm 7 hours into doing this and I haven't mentioned Tom Haberfield once. How's that happened? The all-time, the greatest Welsh scrum half that never was. Tom Haberfield. Better than any scrum half who played in the 2011 World Cup. And I'll say that as a fact. Piri Weepu.
Will Genia.
Take that, Will Genia. Okay, I feel like we're about 2 minutes away from descending into utter rambling nonsense, which somehow suggests that's what the podcast hasn't been so far, which I don't know if that's a good or bad thing, but frankly, it's a thing that I think means that I should stop sentences. So I want to say one final, very much, there we are. He just said goodbye, our fourth guest, my fire alarm, who is still peeping away. I apologise as well if you can hear my neighbours playing bangers as well in the background. They're having a great time in lockdown. I've a few times heard them have friends over. Call the police. Thank you for joining us, Adam. Thank you for joining us, Adam. Today, brother person.
Yeah, it's alright.
it's been a pleasure. I mean, for the 80 minutes that I wasn't watching that game, it's been a pleasure. yeah, if there's any other, I mean, I don't know if there's any anything that doesn't have to be rugby related, anything that's really shit that you want me to sit through. Just actually, no, I have, haven't I? Haven't I, Robbie? I've got something really shit that I want you to sit through.
Yeah.
Maybe you as well, Will, if you want to watch it as well.
I mean, the description is ambiguous. I don't know what to sign up for, but I think I'm in.
I think you want to be in.
Okay.
You've hijacked this before I could even suggest we do a separate podcast watching Cats over and over again. which I have pre-ordered on Blu-ray, incidentally. I don't know if I'll be mentioning that publicly, but I am one of the six people that ordered Cats on Blu-ray. What, as I said, we're descending already.
Yeah, rugby.
Okay. Is that that? Are we going to... I've asked that enough times. I'm just going to call it. I'm going to say, this is the end.
You're the boss here. This is your podcast.
Absolutely it is. And therefore, I say, you know what we're going to do? We're going to stop. We're not going to be the podcast, and therefore I won't be the boss anymore. Wait a second. This is how dictatorships happen. This is like Donald Trump at the end of his second term, which is coming, when he suddenly starts appealing to replace the two-term act.
Fish 2020.
I just compare myself to Donald Trump. I think that's a good time to Dan Fish should be president. Let's agree on that as a note to leave this. Thank you very much for listening right to the end. As ever, if you've got any thoughts on the game, please send them to Israel Folau and also send him pictures of big gay ants. And hopefully he'll enjoy those. Thank you very much. Goodbye.
Hashtag big gay ants, everyone.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.